And welcome back to another awesome episode of Behind the Anvil. We have today an awesome guest, Cowboy. I do not know how to say your last name. I'm not
Zemanski.
even Trey. I'll murder it like I do with so many others. But Cowboy of Phoenix Knives, his wife will be joining us shortly, hopefully. As you can see, an awesome display if you're watching this on YouTube of awesome knives. Cowboy, we're going to let you take it away. Give us a brief, your background, how you started, and everything else. And 3, 2, 1, go.
So my name's Cowboy Zemanski. I've been smithing since about 1997, so about 28 years that I've been smithing. Always had a fascination with King Arthur, Robin Hood, Three Musketeers. Wanted swords and armor, much like most of us smiths. Couldn't find anybody to really teach me. Learned how to do it. Finally, I found somebody to take me in. So I trained as an apprentice. And just over the last 28 years, I keep growing. I've done living history interpretation, blacksmithing, knife making, a little bit of everything that I can. I've studied in Italy, Germany, France, Spain. Kind of all over the place. I've got to travel and go through museums, hold old iron, figure things out. It's been a fun journey for me to explore and really just share with the world and have a good time with it. Many years now, for the last 21 years, I was in an original historic blacksmith shop built in 1891.
Beautiful
And
building, by the way.
do what?
Beautiful building. It's still standing, so it's cool to
Still
see.
standing. I still get to see it every day. It's a lot of fun. And that was a really great experience, really changed a lot of my life, really cemented me and my career and what I'm doing. And then we were getting to where we outgrow it. And this last year, I got an opportunity to literally double the size of my building. We bought a new building this year and went from about 1,600 square feet, 1,800 square feet to over 5,000 now.
That's just awesome.
So it's been an amazing journey over these last 28 years.
Yeah, and we got to come see that your new building this last April. I brought the daughter down finally, was able to. That was an awesome trip. Unfortunately, I apparently brought the cold with us. I have never seen you wear so many layers in my life. And I'm wearing there this t-shirt and thing, and you're bundled up pretty good because 42 degrees is apparently really cold for you guys.
70 is cold to me.
Good point. It was a fun trip, even though it was a little bit nippy. We went and checked out the store. I'm jealous. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm jealous because I'm trying to grow. Kind of had a little setback, but we're getting back. We're getting our feet back under us.
Awesome.
Then this store is right next door to
The old
the original
shop.
shop. So I mean, it was originally a Rockin' Farrier Supply, correct? Or is that a different
Rock
name?
and Beef Farrier Supply. Yep. And
Rockin'
we
Beef,
kept the
sorry.
name. We went ahead and bought the Farrier Supply. So we added on to our business. So now we have multiple businesses running underneath there. So we do have the Farrier Supply. It stays very busy for us, as well as Phoenix Knives. And recently, Texas Knife Maker Supply in Houston, after 30, almost 40 years, closed out, and I was able to buy a lot of their supplies. So Jance and I bought them a lot of their stuff out. Jance got the majority of it and the rights, but it allowed me also to turn my shop now into a knife supply. So we sell
Nice.
handle,
I didn't know they
steel, belts, buffing, pins, hammers, tongs, you name it. We now have a full store to sell supplies to makers. Forges, grinders, everything.
Well, that's good to know. I did not know they closed out. That's well, alrighty then. I guess
Well, see,
I'm just
I've been heat treating for them, doing all their carbon steel for over a decade, and now I've picked up all their stainless as well. And Shanna's been really good to me over at Jance, and now I picked up, they recommend stainless being sent to me. So now I'm doing a lot of heat treating here in the shop. So,
stainless steel is not my forte. I've been asked about it. I'm like, I don't understand it. It's probably cool. It's cool stuff, but yeah, it's not for me. It's just never been in my wheelhouse, I guess you could say.
as a
But
hammerhead, I'm not a stainless guy either myself, so I'm right there with you.
I'm gonna, well, now I know that you are now a knife supplier. I will be definitely purchasing from you guys too. I buy a lot of stuff from Jance. When they don't have it, definitely gonna reach out to you. So
There you go.
You've done the store, you've been doing Texas Select for the last 5, 6 years now?
8 years.
8 years. Oh my goodness. Is
Start
that
we
really?
started in 2018.
Is it really been that long? I guess it has been that long since I've been on the show too. As everybody might not know, if it's listening to this program for the first time, Cowboy is also part of the FIF Forge and Fire alumni. What was it, your episode again?
I was season one, the original 32.
Excellent.
So episode one or season one, episode six, the Elizabethan rapier.
That's right. That's right. Man, we're really going back in time. It's been over 10, I think 10 years or 11
That
years
was
of that.
2015. Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Wow. I don't think they're going to be doing any more of the show anymore. I think it's kind of run its course. At least that's what I've been hearing.
No,
But
they've sold all the sets off. They've sold everything. They're done. David has moved on to another series called Cast in Steel. So yeah, they're all off trying to do other things. In fact, I
oh,
should
okay.
see.
So that makes a lot of sense why we're seeing a lot of other things. So cool. That's good to know. It was a great run. It was a fun time to be on that as well. So tell us something that really, with the new store, what you're really excited about. What adventure part of the new store having that and building onto the basically the great foundation you've already got. And bear with me, I had questions in my head, been thinking about it all morning. They're trying to come up. So.
That's all right. We'll get to them. As far as the store, it's really still very overwhelming to me. So much change. And we joke that I'm not getting to be much of a knife maker anymore. I'm more of a businessman now. So it's like, well, that's a change. The showroom has been probably the biggest pride and joy for me. We all got into this watching Kill Bill and all this. We got to have a whole wall of Tori Hanzo swords and all this type stuff.
Yes,
I actually
yes.
have a wall of swords now. So I've built glass walls that you can see right through and have swords going all the way through it now.
Ooh, cool.
We went from being able to keep maybe 300 knives in our old shop to over 1,000 that I can put in here. You're seeing just a small couple cases behind me. This
Man,
goes
beautiful knives at all.
I had every cabinet handmade out of solid walnut in my design. It's been a really fun project to actually watch what I thought when I began this. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have swords everywhere and all this great stuff. And then I'm like, yeah, the reality is I can't make that many that fast, that hard. And now all of a sudden I actually do have that. And it allows me to give back to the community. We're selling your blades as well as 20, 25 other knife makers' blades here in our shop. And as you well know, we're sending you a check on a pretty regular basis, and we're doing that with a
Yep,
lot of
that's
business.
awesome. That's very awesome.
I've got three journeymen that are working for me, and we're producing as fast as we can to fill this place full of knives. And so being able to have great smiths like yourself come in and help us with that, put knives in here, gives us more diversity. Roger Eckstein from Knife Magazine paid Eileen and a great compliment the other day. He walked in here, he saw the showroom, everything we're doing, and he says, y'all don't need a show. Every day in your shop is a show. You've got so many knives in here. So it's been a really neat growth period to see that happen. And the showroom to me is the most fun part. But this is where we sell, and then we've got all of the workshops and the floors that we work on, and I'm sure we'll get into that as we're going here too.
Yes.
So
We were down there, we got to go in, check out the shop before the show started getting started. Walked in and I'm just like, yes. my goal is to have something similar to what you're doing, showroom, the teaching part. And then I also want to do myself a small manufacturing production line of knives. Just something I've always wanted to do. Want to be able to do the teaching part, the tourism part, and basically that would be my shop. Nobody else is allowed in it. It's just seeing the showroom floor and seeing how everything you guys get set up, it really is like, you know what, this is the right direction that I can finally start to see. For me, it helped me to just realize my vision can become true as yours. Not like saying I'm copying you, but it's one thing that's nice about this knife community. Everybody's like, well, you're copying him. It's like, no, I'm kind of inspired by him because I definitely like what he did. I'm not gonna put my little twist on it, but seeing your showroom floor, seeing the cabinets you had built is just like, wow, not screwing around here. And well done on that. It's very good, and it's awesome. I'm able to leave some knives with you. That's some, about seems like every couple 2 or 3 weeks I get a text from Eileen. She's like, check coming. Like, cool. So it's like Christmas every time and then open that text message. But what is one of the things you hope to see in the next year or two with the shop? I'm putting him on the spot, people.
No, that's all right. I'm good with that. It's constantly evolving. In all honesty, I can't actually tell you what the next step is. Besides working on building up our supplies, I've been working real hard on that over the last, I mean, we've owned this building 11 months. That's it. I mean, I literally got the keys 11 months ago, and I spent, or 12 months ago, and the
Yep,
first month we spent moving. So I've actually only been reasonably functional for 11 months in here. So it's changing daily. I'm having to be very fluid with what I'm doing because I'm not a pioneer in this, obviously. I mean, this industry's been around forever. I am very blessed in what I'm creating, and I'm able to. I have seen my dreams come to fruition, so I'm just flowing with it to see where I go next. I've got my souvenir knife program, our Come and Make It program, has been taking off, and I'm wanting to start building more like Josh Weston, do some dragons and phoenixes to match what we do. So we're going to create a little more ambiance in here for our forging experiences. But my classes have absolutely skyrocketed.
that's
So I'm all of a sudden doing 2 to 3 students almost a week in classes, which my
awesome.
little section of my shop has been a blessing to have. And this couldn't be possible without my three Smiths that work for me up here every day and make this happen. Heath, Joe, Galen are doing my production line of blades. They're handling the customers. I have an amazing crew. That's the only reason this is happening
Don't
is
forget
these.
the wife. Don't forget to mention the wife.
Oh, the boss makes everything
Yes,
really
the
happen.
boss.
She is in charge of everything. My human resources, my management, my payroll department. She's everything. Yeah, I'm too scatterbrained to do all that kind of stuff.
Oh, I hear you. I've been trying to learn. I've actually got a friend of ours that does all the bookkeeping and then everything, the taxes, all that. She does gets on there and does that for me. I tried it. Yeah, I got told, don't ever do that again. I'll do it for you. I'll send you the bill, which is well worth it to me. Trust me. I'm like I said, I'm still learning to do this podcast. I'm still learning how to do the Zoom and everything, get everything set up. So again, I'm being flexible. That's something I had to learn over the last 5, 10 years of, hey, yes, I got an idea. And I'm like, I'm so been used to be steadfast on this idea and how to get there. Nice. Yeah, doing the small business stuff, you definitely got to be flexible, fluid, like you said. And it's been fun. I've learned a lot. Had to step back quite a bit. I had to go take a day job for about a year. But we're getting back into it. I've got a new idea. I'm going to do some budget friendly knives and such. So I'll probably send you guys a bunch more.
Awesome.
So,
Well, hardest thing I've learned is to delegate. I have to trust my guys and delegate, and that trust is a big part.
let's take that that I let's touch on that. That is one thing. I brought some people in here and it's I'm sitting there like, okay, I know how I'll do it. They know how to do it. I just gotta tell myself, hey, it's okay. Let them do it, help them out when they need the help. What do you do to basically kind of take that step back from the hands-on role on those and how
Well, it takes a while to train them. So some of these guys have worked between 6 months and a year and a half just honing their skills and learning to do things my way. It's my shop, my name, and for the most part, they're producing my stuff. So
Yes.
they've got to learn to do it the way I want it done. The only one who's really producing on his own would be Heath Besh, who's also Four Element Smithy. And we have an arrangement in which he works for me and produces my stuff my way. And then he goes home and or works at my shop at certain hours, after hours, and produces his stuff. So I
Awesome.
share the tools and collections and my shop with him to allow him to increase. But he does predominantly chef's knives and a Japanese style knife, which is completely different than my style knife. So we complement each other. We don't really conflict with each other. But communication and teaching them what I want and what I expect and what I need from them and having that understanding. And then communication is king. You know, we talk to each other constantly. And that was really the hard part, that I do have to trust that they listen to my communication, and they do. They do very well by me. So I've been truly blessed. You've met them at the shows. These guys, they carry this. They are phenomenal guys. When I go off, they've got it without me. So I'm almost superfluous. They don't need me anymore.
Well, that's good. I mean, so eventually you get the kit back with a Mai Tai and just kind of, over there or something, or go build the stuff you want to build a little bit more.
It's given me freedom to build what I want to build. And so that's been fun, giving me freedom to start teaching, which is a passion I've always had. I really like teaching. So getting to spend time doing that has been, you know, because every time you teach, you learn something too, because you got to remember why you did that, or they're going to do something wrong and you got to, well, how do I fix that? So to me, teaching is one of the best tools in my toolbox, is being able to adapt, correct, repair. You know, I always say a master doesn't make mistakes. He can just hide his mistakes better than anybody else. And that's really what it is.
And then that kind of, when you say that, that reminds me of a story my dad told me about Buster Warnsky. He's been gone over 20 years. Yeah, 20 years this year. 2005, he passed away. Are you familiar with the name Buster Warnsky? The King Cut Knife. He was one of the big names back in the 80s, and 90s, early 2000s. He was my dad's mentor, one of his mentors and such. He was grinding a buoy, and he accidentally was doing the hollow grind. And he, as dad tells it, again, I'm paraphrasing the story, so if somebody here knows the story better than me, I apologize. Dad said he was grinding it, and it kind of ground through the center of the blade. And you hollow grind, you go right in the center of the blade, and he's looking at it, takes over the bench, gets out these files in a whale tail, because it looked like a whale tail to him the way it come through. So he took a flaw, an oops, and actually added into it, finished up the knife, sent it to the customer. Hey, I threw something extra into you. So so that's just one of the things, you know. But there is times you just gotta, there's an oops, and it's like, all right, throw it to the side, start over again. We've all been there. You were talking about classes. For me, I know how to do it. Just do it in repetition of, you know, grinding the bevels and forging the bevels in. One thing I've had to learn is take what I know and communicate it out in proper words and show them. It's easier for me to kind of show them first. So it's kind of like they do a little bit, I do a little bit more, fix their oops and such like that. What is your style of teaching?
I was that difficult school kid. I was that alphabet kid, ADD, ADHD, you know, all the alphabet.
And present company.
Exactly. I think all of us were. So I couldn't learn in the box that the teachers wanted. And I realized that I'm a very visual learner. But some people aren't. So what I've done is I took everything that I felt like I missed out on in school, and I concentrate on that when I teach. So I'm going to tell them what to do. I'm going to show them what to do in steps, obviously, and I'm going to let them follow those steps. So I give them small steps. Okay, let's hammer out. This is why you design a knife. Let's create this. I'm going to start by hammering the pommel, and then I'm going to work my way through the knife. And then we got a creation of, we draw out the knife. Then I hammer the pommel. They hammer the pommel. Then I hammer the finger well. They hammer the finger well. I do the ricasso. They do. We pull out the tip. We come back to the choil. We pull the choil. We pull the bevels. Then we clean it all up. But each step, I tell them what we're going to do. I'm going to do it. And so I do a follow the leader class. And then I have them do it. And I stand over them, making sure they don't make any mistakes. And I'll ask them, okay, is this what you're wanting to do to this blade? And if they're like, yes, or no, I wanted to go this way. Okay, well, this is how we're going to correct that. Or this is what's going to help you in getting to that position. And so I just work slow and steady with them. Usually the forging's about 3.5 hours. Whether I've got one, two, or three students, we can usually do it in about 3.5 hours. And all of us hammer out a blade 95% of the way done. Their bevels are in there, the blade is shaped. So they've got limited time they actually need to spend on the grinders.
That's a great
And
idea.
as you well know, when you get to the grinders, it's just slow and steady. So I turn them down. I don't give them brand new belts, and we work slow side by side. I show them, they do it, and we just keep working through it. It's a very slow process, but I take everything I wish I would have learned in school and I project that onto my students. And that's how I teach.
That's a great idea. I never really thought about that. That's more or less what I kind of do. I kind of talk about, sorry, we grind from the edge back, and I kind of demonstrate a little bit. And at some point, there's point as I'll stop and say, hey, you watch your shoulders get really tight because they're right up the grinder. Even though I have a variable speed grinder and I turn it down just a little bit, you can still see them. They can see them. They start holding their breath. It's like, all right, step back, relax, deep breath, flay your arms. And they're like, what? No, seriously, flay your arms. It's like. And they're like, do it. And like, oh, I just wonder if you could get you to do it and get them laughing and everything else, relax. And but there's times like, hey, do you want me to step in and show you what you're doing? Maybe like that. But most people seem, I've only had one complaint in the last 6 years of doing it. So I knock on wood here. I think I'm doing it right. So what? Oh, my heavens. I had a thought there and it went.
All right, I got to throw an interjection in here.
Go ahead.
One new thing that I have been doing with this new location, since Greg Reeder at Reeder Grinders has been such a big sponsor to me, and I've got nine of his grinders laying around here. He builds a lot of my tools and parts. I came up, he's created some grinding jigs, and there's a million different grinding jigs out there. I am actually not a big fan of those. But I have done some changes in my grinding technique. I talk to my students. Are you really seriously wanting to make knives, or is this a nostalgia thing? Hey, I came in and I made a knife. This was cool. It's like, is this something you're doing for fun, or is this something you actually want to do? And the ones that are telling me they're wanting to do it for fun, I've actually gotten on the grinders. I now put their blades into jigs and set them up and let them grind with those jigs. So their fingers aren't necessarily dragging on the belts. And they have more consistency in their grind lines, and it takes a lot of stress and it speeds it up for them. So they're not there for hours. You know, as well as I do, when you hand grind a blade, your fingers are rubbing that belt. You're literally touching the belt the whole time. You have no fingerprints, and these guys aren't scared of it. Like you said, they tense up. So by guys who want to learn to make knives, they don't get jigs. They have to learn how to do it by hand because that's going to make you the better knife maker. But the guys who are doing this for something as a neat, hey, I did this, I'm putting them on a jig and taking that ease out of there so they aren't stressing over it. And they walk out with a beautiful knife that's almost impossible for them to mess up.
That sounds
So
like
I've
awesome
changed
idea.
some of my class programs to do that as well. That's been some additions.
That's a cool idea. I've never thought about that for the classes. I've just kind of been doing it just the way I was taught. I've never really considered. I just actually bought a jig for Daisy. We got to talk about it. She's just like, I want to make it, but I just really don't like doing it hands-on. Don't want to grind the fingernails down.
Exactly.
So we got her a jig. We're gonna play with it probably the next couple weekends. Football season going on. She's part of the prep band, so say she does all that and everything. She's like, oh, I'm stretched every which direction. It's like, I wish I was your age again. Please trust me. But that is a great idea. I'm definitely gonna be investing a little bit more in the jigs. I'll have to check out what you guys got. I just bought one off Amazon real quick to her for her to play with. But that's an awesome idea. With the new shop, what opportunities for you and the employees of that the new shop has allowed you guys to do?
Say that one again. What was the
Oh,
question?
sorry. With the new shop, the new building and everything with the more space, what are new opportunities that you didn't think of that the new shop is allowing you guys to do today?
It's enhanced and increased our production line quite a bit. Like I said, it's increased my classes and stuff like that. But I think Heath and I are taking a lot of this, and we're starting to make more tools for knife makers. So Heath and I have kind of combined our businesses and our logos. We still call it Phoenix, but we're using his four element smithy, which was he uses the iron symbol Fe with my NIX. So we're doing the Phoenix that way, spelled differently, combination of our logos to build tools for knife makers, designed by knife makers. So our Guardian systems are set guards. We're starting basically by doing hidden tang tools right now. And we're working on a whole new line to set guards and things like that. We've just got some of our production runs done. I'm tweaking on them. We're going to do some videos coming out here real soon. These are going to keep your, when you set your guard, hot set it will keep everything totally square. So you don't have to hit it twice. And it makes everything line up easier, faster, and more efficiently.
That sounds awesome. I'm intrigued. Definitely looking forward to see that.
Yes, new ideas.
You've been doing Texas Elect for the last 8 years. I know you guys announced here a while back that we're doing a pause for 2026, coming back in 2027. That's giving you guys a little more time, which I was a little bummed out, but that's okay. We get it. So yeah, holidays kind of fall on different days, and with I believe it's Blade Show West. It's like
Blade Show, Texas decided they were going to
Texas.
jump
Sorry.
on our back door. So they're 11 days. There's Eileen, and there's a boss coming in.
The boss.
So, yeah, they jumped 11 days in front of us. Back-to-back shows that big, it was like too hard on a knife maker. And with Easter, it's like, yeah, we need a break. And we've got this new building. We got all this new stuff happening. It's, good Lord's like, take time to focus on what's right in front of you and what you need to do. And that's what we're doing. So it's working
Awesome.
real well for us.
Well, let's get a little bit of input from the boss here, keeping you in line. What is it like to keep Cowboy in line? Oh boy.
Yeah, good luck.
Tell us what you think of the new shop and everything else. I mean, I've heard a little bit. We talked about when we were down there in Texas, which I'm missing Texas, but if y'all had mountains like we got here, I would definitely move down there. But it's a little too flat for me, but that's okay. It's beautiful to visit. But go ahead, boss. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hi. I don't know what to say. Yeah, I love our new building. My favorite part is it came with an office, which means all that stuff on that desk in that office, it is not on my dining room table anymore. He told you about the farrier business that's
Yeah,
here.
we've been talking a little bit about everything.
I was waiting on a customer. I'm sorry.
No worries.
Work around here.
We can turn the screen around if you want to look
Yeah, if
around.
you want to take us on a tour, this is going to go on YouTube. So you want to take us along and she can narrate what's going on.
Can kind of spin around and you can just kind of see as we keep going, it just keeps going with knives and knives and knives.
Kind of
Well,
sharp in there.
it's very sharp in here. And like I said, lots and lots of cases, hundreds and hundreds of knives. Now we're getting into the sword wall, so I'm starting to slide. You can see right on out into the shop. So you can see my guys out there working back there. You can see our
That's
farrier
awesome.
supply back there. We got more swords back here behind me, lots of them. And we slide into the other showroom, lots more cases, lots more knives. So there's just lots and lots to see.
That's awesome.
Holders, a little bit of everything, all sorts of cool stuff here.
So, you do offer Fairy Supply, and then that was the original store, wasn't that not?
Yeah, this originally started as a Western wear saddle shop. Farrier Supply, and he decided to retire. He left it to his daughter and her husband. They ran it for many years, and I kept teasing them that when they were ready to get out of the business, I'd love to have their building and do all that kind of stuff. And then actually right before the April event,
A year
a
ago,
year
yeah.
ago, they came to me in March, 2 weeks before April, our Texas Select event, and said, "Hey, are you ready to buy this building?" I said, "Not right now. I've got an event happening. I can't do anything. Can I come back and talk to you in a month?" And they said, "Well, if it's still here." And I'm like, "Really? You're going to do that to me?" They said, "Well," and I was like, "I'll be back." And so I showed back up right week after our event. And I walk in, I said, "Yes, I'm interested. But what do we need to talk about? How are we going to do this?" And he goes, "I got really one question. Are you interested in the farrier supply?" I was like, "Well, yeah. Let me see the numbers if it's going to work, if we want to do that." And he showed us the numbers, and I said, okay, the Tomahawk alleys are gone. We're buying a farrier supply, and we're going to increase and change the direction of the business. So, to go back to what you asked me earlier, what's going to happen next? I don't know. I am very fluid. If something happens that I look at and say, that's going to be a better deal for me, then I'm going to jump on that deal and I'm going to make that happen. Anything I can do to help the community and make this a lot more fun for all of us.
Yeah, the opportunity to add all the knife making supplies, that was a big deal.
Yeah, notice the boss is keeping us online on what's going on down in the shop. So
I
I
missed that
love
first conversation. I don't know.
it. I kind of someday think I need a little manager, and then it's like, I get squirrel moments, and we do call those on here on the show. We our little squirrel, we dive into a different direction. And I just my question just went ADHD right there. Love it.
There's a fascinating thing between the farrier world and the knife maker world.
Yes, that's actually where I was going.
Some things we have in common. We both use anvils, we both use hammers, we both use tongs, we both use forges. We just use them for different purposes. And so there's a lot of mutual respect between these farriers coming in, and we're the new guys who don't know anything about horses. But they respect the fact that we know a lot about the tools and the steel that we work with. So it's not at all unusual for cowboy to be having a conversation with one of the farriers about what is that tool made of? What kind of steel is in that tool? How do you take care of that tool because of the steel it's made in? He was having this conversation with one of the farriers the other day, and I thought that was very important for the farrier to be able to get that kind of knowledge from cowboy. And then, too, there's a lot of the farriers who are also knife makers. And so it's not unusual that they'll come in here and buy a box of horseshoes, buy some knife steel, buy some handle material, get some sanding belts. They can get everything they need in one stop, and that's pretty convenient.
Well, and some of the knife makers the other day were coming to me going, hey, do you got any farrier's rasp? I need some farrier's rasp. Yeah, we have lots of them. And I've got an endless supply of used farrier's rasp because of all the farriers that come through here. I could literally send tens of thousands of farrier's rasp to everybody. It's like, because they only use them for a short time. And then they're like, yeah, it's no good anymore.
Yep.
So
Amen. And there.
they cross over very well.
So, what kind of knives are your guys' specialty? What do you like, Cowboy? What do you like, Eileen? What do you prefer to make? I'll let you take it from there.
Me personally, I am more about function than anything else. I went into this like all of us, watching Gil Hibben, watching these guys, seeing the magazines, doing all this, going to these fantasy knives, these cool swords, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, I realize what appeals to me is an actual useful knife, something small, something that fits your hand, that's going to hold its edge, do its job, nothing. I mean, I'll do ornate every once in a while, but I'm really more of a simple hunting knife, a utility knife. I like to keep it pretty simple.
Those are our biggest
That's our
sellers.
biggest sellers. I mean, that's
And the chefs.
an everyday. And then, yeah, followed very closely by chef's knives, knives you will use every day, something you have to have. It's fun every once in a while to get to do that fantasy piece, do a really cool dagger. I mean, being a part of the battleship, doing that battleship knife. I'm doing some swords for a historical site here in Texas. Texas has been the only state in the union that elected to join the United States. So we had our own president beforehand. And I'm actually getting the opportunity to rebuild President Lamar's sword for the local living history site.
Very awesome. That's
Cool.
awesome. Yeah, Texas is actually a state by contract. So that's a little awesome thing.
That's
So.
it. We're kind of unique in that regard. So I get to do some fun projects every once in a while, historically based or other things like that. So to me, I'm real influenced by just function more than anything else. And Heath, talking about Four Element Smithy, was a professional French chef for 21 years. So I actually have a true chef that works in my shop that knows what it's like to be in the kitchens and how to use the knives. And he helps guide us on our blade styles and things like that. And he makes his own line of knives in here. So we can really help the customers understand why they want to have that knife and how it's going to be used everyday, long-term use, curvature, weight of the blades. If you don't use them, then it's really hard to actually build them. You know as well as I do, when you build some of those fantasy weapons, your Forge and Fire axe and things like that, big, monstrous things, they're big, heavy, hard to wield, really cool, fun things to build, but it's not something you'd want to swing every
Yeah.
day
Ask
for a
Doug.
living.
Ask Doug. He'll tell you he was sweating by the time he got done. A little bit too heavy. I guess it was my payback for about sweating to death on the outside in the 106, 90% humidity. It was fun, not at the time. But I got a quick question, Eileen. How sharp are your kitchen knives? I make a joke every now on Facebook, every now, hey, Bladesmith, is your sharp knives sharp in your kitchen? Guilty.
Because whenever one of my knives doesn't do what it should do, it comes right up here to the shop and it gets taken care of.
Awesome.
My measure of how awesome is a kitchen knife is how well it goes through butternut squash. If that knife can get
Oh.
butternut squash, it has passed the test.
Ooh, that just sounds so delicious. I haven't had
I
that in
love
a little bit. I want to go buy some.
it's the cut.
It's like that saying, the cobbler doesn't fix his own shoes, or the fair, et cetera. It's kind of a joke I put out there, and then afterwards I get my knives, go out the sharp, and every now I like to be a smart aleck. I've got fiberware steak knives. Was like, well, you make knives? She says, yeah, I make knives to sell them. I don't collect my own, because if you do have
Well,
them,
in
but.
our house, it's been a tough learning curve. See, when I met Eileena, she had all these
Oh
really
boy.
junky knives. And she had it, there was one or two black iron blades in there. And I'm like, oh, good, we got a black iron blade. So I brought it to the shop and sharpened it all up because I really love to cook. So I get pretty elaborate about cooking and I want a good knife. I've worked with some professional chefs. So to me, it's important to be able to get a good tool and make good food. I'd make sharpen up one of her knives, and then I'd come back a couple days later, a week later, to visit her and say, "Hey, let me cook dinner and all this." And I was like, "What happened to the knife that I did?" She goes, "Oh, it's out in the garage. I was cutting down some tree limbs with it because it's the sharpest knife I own." And I was like, "And so, for the first couple of years of our relationship, I had to deal with some really crazy dull knives, and there was a lot of training that happened
I
there."
had a learning curve in how to take care of knives.
So when I finally was, we got married, we did all that kind of stuff. I was like, okay, now I'm bringing in good knives. These will not leave the kitchen ever. And so there was a training curve, and now she's really gotten into it, and she can appreciate a really good knife now.
I'll bet she keeps you sharp, though. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm on my toes constantly.
It's mutual.
Well, we can tell who runs the shop there, the boss. So Eileen, what do you think about this whole, diving in? What are your thoughts? New shop, growing big. You got your kitchen table back, your dining room table back, and you got your own office. What is, step back and just kind of when you look at everything, go, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Of everything.
We have accomplished so much. What I love about this is I've heard Cowboy talk about this for years. That's no exaggeration when he was saying he had his eye on this building for many years, what he would do with this building if he could get it. And I really thought it was a pipe dream. That's never going to happen. And when it came to the place where we were in a place where we could actually, make an offer and the offer was going our direction, like, this is really happening. I was very sentimentally attached to the old historic blacksmith shop. I loved playing tour guide and sharing the history of that shop with people. But it didn't take me about 2 minutes to fall in love with this place. I like air conditioning a whole lot.
I'll bet.
And the young couple that moved into the old shop, that made my heart very happy that the young couple moving in was getting their start on Main Street, like Cowboy got 21 years ago. And so for them, it was exactly what they needed, and they're, sharing the love and the history of that building with people now. And so for me in this place, I can look around every wall, ceiling, and floor and see what Cowboy's talked about for years. And physically, here it is. This has been his dream. And he this room that's all beautiful now, it was not anything like this a year ago. And he would stand up here in this space and say, "Eileena, this is what I dream. This is what I see. I envision cases like this, and I want it to look like this. We're going to do the ceiling. We're going to do the floor. We're going to make this sword of wall of swords over here. And so every single day I come to work and I see this dream come true. It's work. Like these are 12, 14-hour days every day. You know, it is work, but it's very satisfying. It makes my heart very happy
And
to
that's
get to
what I
be.
was saying, I was telling Cowboy earlier, coming down and seeing the new store and everything, and listening to your guys' story ever since we first met and everything. And seeing that, it's like, I've kind of had that little, oh, am I really going to reach my goal? What new shop I want, something similar to what you guys are doing. Then I also have an idea for a steakhouse. It's the steakhouse is going to be blacksmith, bladesmith themed, kind of the decor. How I want to go with it. I've got it all in my head. I've actually built a model with my daughter on kind of how I want to do it. And everybody sees that, it's like, what, you built that? It's like, yeah, this is. There's times it's kind of, oh, am I going to really make that? And then we'll see what you guys done. It's like, okay, it's going to take time. It's going to take work. But if they can do it, I can do it. And I would say
Exactly.
that would be about anything else. What it, over the years, as you were saying, Eileen, it's like, oh, is that really going to happen? I mean, I'm sure you had your moments of doubt. What did you guys do to push through, to push forward, to build this dream together? And it's been a team effort, I'm pretty sure, especially keeping you in line as well. I mean, I'm just going to pick on you a little bit, so.
You know, 21 years of just steadily doing the right thing in that old shop. Steadily growing that business, steadily having customers knowing they can come back to him and they can depend on the product. There's no miracle overnight success to this.
Just keep your goal in mind and just push at it the whole time. Just keep, but be open-minded to change, because you don't know what opportunity is actually going to be the stepping stone to get you there. I've been pushing for, well, 18 years when I went on Forged and Fire 10 years ago. And then I kept pushing up until about 2019. And that's when I decided we were going to implement the souvenir knife programs that we did. And I saw people doing something similar. And I'm like, okay, this could be a really good adaptation to what we're doing. I've kind of plateaued in what I'm doing. I need to reinvent something. And I was like, I came back and was like, I want to do this. And Eileen looked at me and said, okay. And she's just like, I gotta find something to hold on to. Let me put my seatbelt on. We're going for a roller coaster ride here. And I decided to try this and it launched. But it was a perfect storm. I came up with the idea to do our souvenir knife, decided how I wanted to do that souvenir knife, started implementing it, and then 2020 hit, COVID hit. And then everybody got shut down. I never shut down.
Okay, technically, the governor never said that blacksmith shops had to close down.
Yeah, we were the blacksmith shops never had to close down, so we didn't close down. We stayed open. I told
And we
the
were an open air venue.
yeah. So I talked to the city managers and I said, I'm not planning on closing. And they're like, well, do whatever you want to do, whatever you feel like you need to do. I said, my guys are good. And I had one guy with me at that time. I was like, do you feel like you're worried about this? He said, no. I said, I'm not either. Let's just go with it. And next thing you know, my phone starts ringing. All the parents at home with their kids going, we're stuck at home with our kids. And we're going to kill our kids. We need something to do. And I was like, we're open. Come on in. We're open air. We're fine. And we don't worry about any of this stuff. If we get sick, we get sick. Who cares? Come on in. We were 60 people deep for the next year and a half. I started calling people I know, I need help, and started hiring guys and bringing them in and training as fast as I possibly could. So I went literally overnight from me and Ilena and a part-time high schooler to four full-time Smiths, Eileen, two part-time counter people, and we were just jamming for the next. It was just happened overnight. I never expected it, never thought it was going to be the first domino to start falling, and it just kept progressing. And we started doing our shows just before that, and those started running, and it was just like it was just a perfect storm. So starting about 2018, we started the shows to meet the Forged and Fire guys. 2019, we started the new program. COVID hit, bam, bam, bam. It just started just going. You never know what's going to be the trigger. So that's why I say keep your mind really open and be fluid. Take a chance. I've owned multiple businesses, and I've closed multiple businesses because they just weren't as successful as I wanted or needed them to be. But what I always learned, it's easy to make money. It's hard to keep it.
Yes.
Take the chance. You can always go out and you can make more money. Be willing to take a chance and fall on your face and see what happens. Most of the time, the further you reach out there, the bigger the rewards are for you.
Yes.
And I'm proof testament of it right here in the shop with what we've created. It's really given us a huge opportunity here in the shop.
Awesome. Well, let's kind of pivot away from this and get something really cool on. Do you want to share any personal stories of, like what you like to do besides knife making, of like hunting, fishing? I mean, something really cool you want to share that you never got an opportunity on. You've done a lot of interviews. That's one thing I love what you guys do with promoting the Texas Select show. I mean, it just, I sit there and watch that and like, he's got it. Yes, I need to learn, follow. So just kind of something you wanted to share and talk about, just
Okay,
whatever.
see, before we bought this building, we used to do other
That's
things.
what I was going to say. It kind of ties into what we were just talking about. Before I had a building, we had a life. Now we have a building, all we do is this. No,
It'll even out.
it will. We'll find our equilibrium and it'll be balanced. But we're both very active outdoors people, very active hunters, both bowyers. We also hunt rifle. We actively kayak. We love backpacking. We love rock climbing. I mean, I earned before I became a knife maker, I was 10 years as a professional athlete, skating for Team Rollerblade, racing mountain bikes with Gary Fisher, GT, doing things like that, sponsorship, just traveling everywhere, having fun, doing sports. I mean, snow skiing, water skiing, you name it, I did it. If it was an extreme sport, still ride motorcycles. Now all my motorcycles have a half inch layer of dust on them, and
And the surfboards are getting
surfboards
dusty.
haven't been brought out in a long time. We'll get back to it, but it's like we were very active outdoors enthusiasts. So I love doing all that stuff. But that's what I did for the first part of my life. I would work enough to go on another trip.
Well, that kind of is how what led you into meeting Lee Oates from where you were working.
Yeah. About the same time I was retiring from being an athlete and doing sports on a professional level, getting paid, I was like, I can't keep up anymore. I met somebody who'd made knives, and Lee took me into his home and taught me how to do this. And I just transitioned and took another leap of faith. I actually was working as a manager of a sporting goods store at that time. And I talked Lee into teaching me. He said, yeah, just show up tomorrow, I'll teach you. And I quit my job and showed up the next day and started knife making. 28 years later, I'm still making knives. So it was a complete leap of faith. I didn't have a fallback. I decided this is what I'm doing
That's
and just
awesome.
jumped into
That's a one hell of a success story there. For me, you're the previous, we'll bring up a little bit of politics here. We'll just skim the layer of it because I don't want my blood pressure going through. The last administration, the economy kind of, for at least out here, my classes were doing really good, and another thing caught up to us, and I just kind of had to go take a day job, which was kind of a bruise to my ego because I didn't really want to work for somebody else because now I got that, 2, 3 years of working for myself, and I had to learn to be humble and best I can. I'm kind of back to full time for right now. I probably will pick up another day job. Talking to a few buddies of mine of through my ideas over the few years. One of them was kind of like how you guys do to get a storefront. I thought about doing a kind of a coffee sandwich shop because I like coffee. I've got a friend down there in Seguin, Texas. I found out one thing: if you don't say Seguin right, there's Texans will pop out of nowhere and correct you. Cowboy being one of them as well. He does some roasting down for me. If you guys ever want to get into the coffee part of for the shop, I'll introduce you guys. He's a great guy, Navy vet, just out of there. But I thought about doing that, and I kind of got thinking: well, we do the front part of it, and then do the finishing shop with like a little forge. Come make a knife, what I call my knife making experience, a day class. We kind of just boom, 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 boom. And by the time they leave with a functional knife. I mean, we kind of skim the tops, the basics to show people how that most people are coming to do this is just to, hey, I got to make this, and at the end of the class, you're like, wow. And I haven't got that far yet. We're still working that direction. Last weekend, a buddy of mine reached out and was talking, was, hey, I got an idea. How about we make some budget-friendly knives? like kind of within this price range. I molded over my head. So I got a lot of spring steel, just sitting around rusting away. It's like, you know what? Let's put that to use. So I'm going to kind of gear up and do with a little sheath, about 60, 70 bucks right in there is what I'm thinking. And I set my challenge this week of 100 blades. I'm going to forge 100 blades out in a week. I am now at sitting at 34 as of today. Elbow starting to feel it because I've been doing about 10 to 12 a day. But after working for somebody else for a year, I look back and I says, I do really appreciate the blessing I had of being able to work for myself and trying to get back to that goal. And and it's like I do a lot of prayer, and I, my faith is kind of just if I do my part, maybe he'll open doors for me, knock and such like that. And I just kind of after talking to my friend, I'm like, all right, I hear it. So I'm pivoting that way, kind of going a little different direction. Still doing my cable Damascus, doing the high-end builds. I want to get myself, I would like to do a few mosaic Damascus knives and such, just to see if I can do it for a personal goal. Have you guys ever gotten into that point going over the last 20 years of doing what you're doing, getting that one day you just kind of like hit the wall and such? What have you done that really, besides putting in the work and grinding here? And I'm going squirrel. We're gonna let you turn it back over to you because my frame just went. Sorry, bear with me.
I hit a lot of walls. I do. What usually helps me through those walls is working with another smith. So, like, I've been 28 years making knives now. In 2.5 weeks, I'm going to go take a class with Johnny Stout, and I'm
Ooh.
going to learn how to make folders. I make my own friction folders, but I don't make fancy folders. Now I'm going to go do that just to push my skills, just because I can. So I try and find, a lot of knife makers, and I've always enjoyed this part, is a lot of knife makers trade knives. It's like, hey, I made a knife, here's one for you, vice versa, and we'll swap knives. And they're kind of amateur collectors. That never really did much for me. What I like doing is going and making a knife with them. Now I made something with this knife maker, so I have something tangible that I made with them, and I learned from them. I experienced what they're doing. I got to see how they do it, and I got a piece of them when I got that knife. So it's something I do with them. So to me, that's my inspirations, is I will find a smith to go work with to improve my skills, to make me better, to experience what they're like, get to know them better. As well as anybody, when you're sitting in the fire and you're sweating and working and grunting and grinding and complaining together, you're in the trenches, you learn about each other and you get to know each other. That to me is more fun. I build a friendship with them and I get inspired to go try something new,
Yeah.
something outside of my normal realm. Because like I said, I kind of get set in my ways. I'm like, this is what I like to do. It's easy, it's functional, it works. So all of a sudden I look up and every knife I have looks exactly the same. I'm like, okay, time for me to get out of this rut.
Yes.
And I'll find somebody to teach me something new. Or
Like you worked with Ray Kirk,
yeah.
worked with J.D. Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around and worked with a lot of really good guys, and just my knife collection is pieces done in collaboration. So a collaborative piece is so much more cool to me. Or I'll find a historical site, like getting to do Washington on the Brazos, do President Lamar's sword or something like that. I'll find something that is out of my normal. Right now, this next 2 years actually is about to be busy. I've started working with Texas A&M College here. So I'm
Awesome.
doing the Aggie Blacksmith Club started a couple years ago. I helped them kind of get going, get their feet going. And this last May, when we're finishing up classes, they had a changing of the guard. This is in all the years I've been working with them, the first year that none of the original members are part of the hierarchy. They've all graduated and had to go off to get real jobs. So we're now starting with the next generation that have started from the beginning, started learning, and now are taking over the club. So I'm working with the Aggie Blacksmiths Clubs. They're in here twice a month. I've got the Aggie sword building teams. So colleges all over the country get together, and the material sciences department have a competition of making an edged weapon. So they got to do engineering, material sciences, metallurgy, all this other stuff. And they build a sword, and these colleges get together and compete, and who gets to take home a trophy. And so I've done that for four teams now, with them.
Nice.
And an aerospace company and A&M just got together with me, and we're doing a big capstone project. We're hoping to try and reduce heat treating and corrosion resistance. So we're doing a huge 2-year study capstone project on heat treating and corrosion resistance on modern day carbon steels, and seeing if we can redesign the heat treat process so when you heat treat your knife and you put it on your table, it's not having rust spots on it a week later. So
Yes.
with the steels we use every day, so we're trying a whole new program of heat treating right now.
Very
So
cool.
hopefully I'll
That
be
sounds
I'm
real
hoping I can
awesome.
finish a book here soon. So something that's going to help you guys out and make something better, make all of us better makers.
Well,
And
I'll
so
tell you
this
what, this got me get jazzed up. I'm definitely I'll be going back out in the shop. I'm just trying to get a bunch of production built up right before Christmas too. Do my budget. Still going to do a few other things. Do a couple of custom things. Matter of fact, we kind of brought up touch about going to making it with another maker. You know, with my knife classes, I have forged some really good friendships. Not only with you guys and everything else, with out of my class, Sam. You met Sam, big guy who come down to the show a couple times with me, a couple of years in a row. He comes down to the shop. He's actually. I have an extra bedroom. He's got some stuff down there. That's just kind of a weekend getaway, get away from the city. He was down over the weekend, helped me. Sitting there trying. I've had this katana sword for 20 years, literally. I forged it out. My dad helped me forge it out 20 years ago. It's 600 layered Damascus of 01 tool steel, A36 mild steel, and it got sitting around and such. The reason why it sit around for so long is, well, we didn't know how to heat treat it at the time. All the guys that he grew around doing that big heater, all retired and everything else, and then Forge and Fire comes along, and then I meet Tim and all that. Tim Troyer, Sugar Creek Forge out of Ohio. I got with him, and he heat treated it. It kind of got set in the corner for a year, and we kind of forgot about it. And he panicked, like, "Well, I don't know where it's at." And his wife's like, "Well, I took it in the house. I didn't want it disappearing on you." So we got that, and I'm working on it. And Sam's come down, and we've put talk back and forth. And you know, he's kind of come in. He's kind of the shop apprentice. I show him. I let him do. He helps me out, and then he gets to use my shop and everything else for working on his projects as a thank you and for helping me get through and get ready. Because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't been able to get ready for the two shows back when I did when we came down to you guys. So he has a lot of help on the shop, and that's one thing. If you guys done that, have forged friendships with people that come in the shop. Stuff like that. I mean, now you guys are like best friends and they come and do whatever, you know, help, et cetera.
And that's really one of the cool things from the Forged in Fire that we never expected was these amazing friendships that have developed because of having that experience in your background in common, that people who haven't stepped into that arena can't even begin to imagine what it was like. And guys who have been on that show, you took a risk, you put yourself out there, and there's a certain amount of respect, for that. No matter how you turned out on your episode, you stepped into the arena. The friendships that had developed, people that we never would have gotten to meet otherwise, like Cowboy was saying, getting to work with Ray Kirk, getting to work with JD Smith, competing with JD elbow to elbow was just like, that's an honor to be in the same room with him.
Yeah, all the guys.
All of them.
But yeah, going back on that a little bit more, when I got into this back in 97, I mean, the internet was there, but not as big as it is now, was hardly anything. And so, and of course, us being Smiths, we're not real big people. We like to hide in our little dungeons and do our job. And so finding a Smith to help teach you and things was hard to do. And so that was one of the things I felt Forge and Fire really did very successfully is open up the doors and the pathways for us to get to know each other and to create things like the Texas Select Show, to have y'all come down and spend time down here. Us going to Oklahoma, Louisiana, Arkansas, other places, getting to run into everybody at different shows, it really opened those doors to create friendships and opportunities for us to learn more than we would have on our own.
And that's true. And I grew up, my dad started about the time I was born. He's had a fancy making knives for a lot of years. After Vietnam, he worked on the went back to the railroad till they closed, coal mines, haul wood, did whatever he could do up to about the mid-80s. And then mom wanted to get, she had an interest in going to the sheriff's department, becoming a deputy sheriff. Mom's like, hey, I'll take care of the bills. You go do this. Dad took Jim Ince. Sorry, I had to think there for a minute. These gentlemen have since passed, and Busker Warnski kind of took him under their wing and taught him and everything. He learned how to make Damascus from Bill Moran. I'm pretty sure you know that name. Apparently they went up to Wyoming. I was about a month old. I don't remember this trip, and I kind of took it for granted growing up because. But when you're saying that, back in the 90s and such, you had the magazines, you had, if you didn't have anybody in your area, it was kind of hard to, unless you went to the big shows, to do those interaction. And like you said, Fortune Fire really opened up, especially for me, because I was kind of naive and thinking, a lot growing up and everything, everybody had a shop like my dad's. Like, well, no, that's not true. I mean, we have different ways of our shop and everything. That's been really cool. And especially with Texas Select show, it's opened a lot of avenues up, and I've got contacts. Hey, I have a problem. Shoot a message. Hey, you got a minute? And getting the feedback, it's just it's really opened a lot of avenues, especially for somebody like me, and getting where I am at today. So I have to tell you, thank you for the show and everything. It's really cool. We're getting kind of close up on time here. Is there anything you want to pass on to what I'm going to dub this my words of wisdom moment for the next 5, 10 minutes on whatever, regardless if it's bladesmithing, blacksmithing, like you were into sports or anything you want to pass on and for people to inspire, et cetera.
The biggest thing that my mentors have ever told me was take a chance. Don't be afraid to fall. You're going to learn more from failing and falling than you ever will from succeeding. So know your limits, push them beyond, see how far it takes before it breaks. It's another one of my mentors also once said, it doesn't matter what you do, you can do needlepoint. It doesn't matter. You just have to do it 8 hours out of every day. If you want to build your business, work 8 hours, not sit behind the counter and wait for somebody to walk in the front door. That's not going to get you anything. You have to be producing something for 8 hours every day. That will help you get what you want. If you want to get rich, you got to do that for 16 hours a day. But those two mantras really have taught me a lot and helped me make things happen. So that's the two biggest things is just fail repeatedly and just work and it'll happen. If you strive and you do it and you do it with a smile on your face, it happens.
And
Then
cry
you gotta have
later in the dark, later
crazy.
on in the day. Eileen, the same question for you.
What was the question?
Your words of wisdom, passing on, what you guys been through for people thinking about getting started in a business, or they hate their 9 to 5.
Yeah, I see my battery is really low, so let me say this as fast as I can.
Yes.
Putting out your quality product, being authentic with your customers, obviously, you just can't say that enough. But also, we've been very blessed that we have a chamber of commerce that works with us. We've had a lot of other businesses in town that share interest with
I've
us.
been very supportive.
Yeah. And so we find ways to, okay, tourists from the castle, we'll go to the castle first and then they come here. We share advertising back and forth, between the two places.
Find like-minded businesses that work
Yeah.
with.
So working together, we have such community support and we sponsor as much as we can afford to sponsor, from Little League to Lions Club to fire department, you name it.
Advertising.
And but it comes back around. Those people will come back in here when they're ready to shop for something. And so for us, being a very vital part of our community, being involved in our community as many ways as we can, I mean, you just, nobody's an island, right? You've got to be able to work with others.
That's a lot of the reason Texas Select was such a huge success was the support of the town.
Yeah.
Our community is what made it. So really have good ends with your community. I want to throw one more into my part. Running this and making this happen really comes a lot from my retail experience. I manage sporting goods stores. I manage retail stores for most of my life. So understanding inventory, customer service, things like that is a huge, if you've got to go out and get a daytime job, go work some retail and really understand how merchandising works, how to sell stock, how to talk to the clients, what they need from you, what makes a store successful. When you understand sales trends and marketing and things like that, product placement, that is huge help if you're going to run an outfit like what we're doing here.
And pray.
And pray, a lot of
Pray.
pray.
A lot
I
of
pray every
prayer. I know
day.
that. And that's what I've done. I've worked in a couple of last through before I went full time. I worked in a little bit of manufacturing and of the gun company, great company. Then went full time. Then I had to go grab another job in manufacturing. And I kind of, I was sitting there and watch, and I said, be watchful, just kind of see how things go. And you can see the kind of pitfalls of management and everything. And the recent job that I left, same thing. You pick up notice little things and like, all right, I'm learning. It's not only a job, but it was, I'm learning just as you said. And that's kind of, it's funny you say that. It's like, okay, what else do I need to learn here? Because I want to grow to where you, similar to what you guys are doing. We've already discussed that and everything else. Is there anything else that maybe you wanted to touch on real quick? If you want to just, I know your battery's getting low. And so, I mean, you guys, I'm learning this. I did a few episodes with some buddies of mine that's had a podcast for quite a while. So I'm just learning as I go. I'm pivoting and so.
You're doing it right. You're supporting us, allowing us to help you, the community. You're doing everything just right, and we appreciate you letting us be on here with you and have fun talking.
And letting us sell your knives in our store.
Yes,
Yep.
thank you. We're gonna get some more. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Daisy wants to get doing, but there's a little bit of stress. We won't get into that. That's kind of some private stuff, but she's gonna get back out to it. So right now, lately, she's having fun working on my truck. There's still a thing. I'm gonna go watch a video to you. You ain't gonna do it. I'm gonna do it, Dad. Okay, have fun. I appreciate it. Hey, if people are traveling through, you're in Belleville, Texas. I can't remember if I said that at the beginning. Where can they find you on the, social media website, et cetera? Plug all that and anybody else.
TikTok is phoenix.knives.bel, Instagram Phoenix Knives, Facebook Phoenix Knives. Our website, phoenixknives.com. So,
Yeah,
and
there
it
you go.
is PHE. That's it. PHENIX. That's it. Thank
That's
you.
it. So
Yeah,
yeah, we hear
me
everyone.
and Sam was having a healthy debate. No, it's Phoenix. No, it's spelled another way. Are you sure? And I looked at it. It's like, all right, you're right. I'm bad. I'm
We didn't want to be associated with Arizona. We wanted the legend of the Phoenix. Our steel goes into the fire, rises from the ashes as something new and beautiful, and lasts forever. So that's why we went with Phoenix Knives.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys trusting me and letting me do this kind of ramble. Hopefully, I made sense. I hope everybody else makes. You guys are hitting it right on the nail, as to so to speak. So, but we're going to wrap up. And any final thoughts, words?
Thank you so much. This
Thank you,
has
Mike.
been so much fun getting to see your face again and getting to
Yes.
talk to you again.
Always enjoy it.
So thank you
Well,
for having
hopefully,
me.
somebody's have to see my face. Usually, some people are like, "Ooh, who's that?" That's usually me first thing in the morning. So, but
We've
hey,
had
I
a lot
appreciate you.
of fun over the years.
I'll drop you a few messages on. I use ChatGPT to help write because I am not the best with the word English word, language and grammar. So I'll send you a couple things on this episode. But hey, we're gonna wrap up. And as we say in the shop here, stay sharp, America. Thank you again. God bless. And if you guys just hold on 1 second.